Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.
You're all very, very welcome back. Lots of people responding to that piece on Rupert Isaacson, one including from a music therapist who talks about how the therapeutic value of horse riding is all about the rhythmic vibrational coherence of animal to human person. So lots of things coming in there. But now on to another issue, because whether you love it or hate it, and I have to say I'm conflicted on it, there is no doubt that reality TV is the defining TV format of the 21st century. Love Island has just wrapped up for another season, and there is talk of a revival of Big Brother next year. It seems we cannot, us judgmental human beings, get enough of passing judgment on those who take part. One who does enjoy doing that is 2FM's Afric O'Connell. He's going to join us to talk through the highs and lows.
Very judgmental.
Yeah, very judgmental. There we go. Don't go to the lawyers just yet. I mean, in a good sense, you're judging it for us. I get conflicted, I have to say. On this, but are you one of those people who kind of rubbishes it but then is glued to it?
No,
are you one of those types?
No, I'm not a hypocrite. I fully happy to admit that I enjoy a bit of trash as much as the next person. I love Love Island because basically I have season 4 blow-in. In 2018 I started watching it because I was living with two of my friends. There was one telly in the house and you either watched Love Island or you went to bed at 9 o'clock. There was no in between. So I loved Love Island, so I've been glued to it ever since and really enjoyed it.
Would you go on it though?
Not for all the money in the world, no way.
Let's go back to the evolution of this type of things, because like, when did it even begin? What was the sort of first iteration, really, of what we now know as reality TV?
Yeah, so it's interesting because there are a few programmes that were around in kind of even the 60s and 70s that you could kind of call an iteration of reality TV. So there was one in 1964, a lot of people will know. It's called 7 Up, and it followed...
Too early for me, and you as well. What did 7 Up do?
So it followed a group of kids, ordinary 7-year-olds, and did from a vast kind of cross-section of society, and conducted sort of interviews with them, the 7-year-old kids, and then they would come back to them 7 years later to see how their lives had changed.
Oh gosh,
so 7 years later, so they did 7 Up, they did 14 Up, 21 Up, all that kind of stuff, and it's, you know, ongoing, and it's brilliant. It is a brilliant series, very sad in a lot of places, but very real. So it is one of the earliest
examples. That was kind of one of the earliest ones, and presumably American.
Oh God, absolutely.
Because it really was the Americans who really sort of developed this genre. I suppose a lot of it focused on dysfunctional families.
Absolutely.
Really, wasn't it?
Yeah. So in 1973, PBS broadcast an American family. So it showed a nuclear family, this was all filmed in 1971, going through a divorce. And like later reality shows, it was sort of documentary in purpose and kind of style as well. And in 1974, then the British counterpart to the programme, The Family, was made in the UK, and it was following the working class Wilkins family of Reading. So they're kind of early enough examples of reality
TV. But kind
of
probably more sober, observational
Absolutely.
Kind of types. For me, I think the moment, and I don't know if it could be classified as a reality TV genre, but the O.J. Simpson
Absolutely.
Thing just... It was just such a big impact.
It was
such a big moment for TV.
Generally. Yeah, absolutely. So it was 94, 95. O.J. Simpson, a huge, very famous athlete in the States, was, first of all, there was a 90-minute chase by the police when he was in his white Bronco. Everybody remembers that. You know, and then there was the trial, which was 1994 to 95. Networks interrupted their normal broadcasting for months on end to show this trial. People were absolutely glued to it. And there is absolutely no doubt that it was one of the first forays, I guess, of normal people into sort of, it sounds crass, but it was reality TV. And a lot of the true crime genre that you see now is can be closely linked back to the O.J. Simpson trial. Robert Kardashian, funnily enough,
I was just about to say, look, one, first of all, the total difference between the US and anywhere else in terms of courtroom TV, which I still struggle with as
Absolutely.
A former court reporter, but one of the laws of unintended consequences was that it gave birth to the Kardashians.
It did. And Robert Kardashian was, and of course they've made a drama series based on the trial of O.J. Simpson as well. But Robert Kardashian was one of the lawyers in the case, and of course is Kim Kardashian's father. Mm. Has since died, but his family and his daughters have become the queens of reality TV as we know it now.
They own it, as the Americans might say. They own it.
Untouchable in terms of reality TV. So yeah, it's interesting, and a lot of people draw that comparison.
So it started out kind of well intended as kind of meaningful documentary, kind of let's look at these people's lives, and then it just became, in the 90s, it was the fly on the wall.
Exactly.
Just took off like something.
It did. And in the States, particularly, it kind of all kicked off on MTV around 1992, reality TV as we know it now. It is very similar in format with The Real World.
Yeah.
So, and there were millions of seasons of The Real World, but it all kicked off in 1992. So they give them, they take all these young people together, put them in the most gorgeous loft in New York, and just kind of, they would, you know, have them interact, of course. They give them a theme to talk about. It was politics in the first season. And then they'd have, like we see now, inserts where they're chatting with producers separately and stuff like that. All kind of, all came, you know, produced very defined characters in all of the seasons, and was hugely popular for years and years and years.
What was so different when the big beast that was and apparently is still going to be Big Brother came along?
It's really interesting because I was listening to a great podcast about this recently. It's called Unreal, and they were talking about Big Brother and how really reality TV as we know it now, and what took over in the 21st century, was Big Brother was the daddy of this. It was an imported format from the Netherlands, and it was very much the first one in the UK that cut through, as they say, in TV. There had been lots of, you know, other reality types, but this was, and subgenres as well, and this was in the social experiment subgenre. So it hit the screens first in 2000 and was wildly popular on Channel 4.
And it converted people who were not famous into celebrities just by virtue of the rest of us being able to look at
completely
what they did. Like when you think of the late Jade Goody, who had launched her into the world, but almost nearly destroyed her as well.
A really interesting arc with Jade Goody, because she was in season 3 of Big Brother in 2002, was emerged from the house in third place, I think it was, having had the most hideous things written about her by Red Top Paper. Brutal, like things written about her by Red Top Papers, but leveraged her fame in a really clever way. Huge brand deals, you know, lots of presenting, a perfume line, all that kind of thing.
Well, just hold on there, because I think we might have, hopefully, do we have a clip of the late Jade Goody?
Discovered a verruca on my finger and on my toe since being in this Mingian house.
You can't get a verruca on your finger.
It's the same as on my toe. So if it's shared the same Mingian shower as me, has passed it on to me.
Have you got any flip-flops, Jade? You should wear them in the shower and everything.
Keep them on now, Jade.
You don't swear.
Yeah, you should put them on because they're very contagious. That's why you've caught one.
Yeah, don't spread it to us, though.
I'm cringing at that. She was mocked relentlessly. She was clever. She went and she marketed.
She really did.
But then her second iteration of come back into the house did not
huge
work
mistake.
For her.
Yeah, huge mistake. So she went back into the house. She was originally in the house in 2002. Big Brother had a celebrity Big Brother offshoot, which would kind of come later in the year. And Jade went back in 2007. And it kind of all fell apart for her.
In so many ways.
She was friends with Joe O'Mara from S Club 7 and Danielle Lloyd, who was a kind of a wag at the time and a model. And they were accused of bullying fellow Indian contestant, Bollywood star Shilpa Shetty. And when you look back at the clips now, this caused an international incident. You know,
India and UK, it was a massive big thing.
Gordon Brown kind of had to placate, you know, India. And, you know, there was a sort of diplomatic incident, which sounds ridiculous when you think about it from all Big Brother. But Jade came out as one of the most hated figures in the UK. And as a kind of a... an appeasement, I guess, or a try, an olive branch nearly to India. She went on Indian Big Brother to kind of try and, I suppose that it was ostensibly to make amends or to learn or to
and
do
then,
whatever.
But she learned something during that stint
which
on
is
Indian Big Brother.
Just incredible to think that she went into Indian Big Brother. She went into the diary room. It was called Big Boss in India. And she was called into the diary room and told that she had been diagnosed with cervical cancer. And this went out on TV.
I always struggled with that.
Wild.
Decision. However, in true sort of Jade Goody style, she sort of even turned that around.
She did.
An enormous legacy for those raising awareness about cervical cancer.
Yeah.
We have a lot of very, very big 7-Up fans out there who have reminded me, corrected, I stand corrected, it was in fact an English production. It
yes.
wasn't American. There you are. The listeners always reveal themselves. They're mad at that stuff. I want to go on. There's a possible revival of that show in 2023. And I wanted to bring in, if he's on the line, someone who knows only too well what it's like to be a resident of the Big Brother house. It is, of course, Ray Shah. And he's on the line now. Ray, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing absolutely great. Were you surprised to hear that Big Brother was coming back, and would you go back into the house?
Not surprised. I think it was a case of when rather than if, because, you know, listening to you there, it was the biggest reality TV show. And when you've seen how popular the likes of Love Island and stuff is as well, I think it was just a case of, yeah, it's definitely going to come back, but who was going to take it back on?
Yeah, what did you, like, I mean, obviously you went in the year after Jade Goody. You had maybe a better sense than others of what to expect. Was it overall a positive experience for you?
Oh, for me, it was absolutely brilliant. Like, I had one of the best experiences from the show and after as well. And, you know, I was kind of lucky in that sense as well, because I know the likes of Big Brother can make or break you. But, yeah, you knew, obviously, with this series beforehand, how big it was. And I suppose what you're looking to do is kind of, you kind of expect a certain amount of, I suppose, press and all that stuff as well after the show was so big the year beforehand.
Can I ask you about earlier Afric and I were saying, would you go in for one of these shows? And the two of us are like, no, comprehensive, no. But you spent months auditioning.
Yeah.
Why did you go in to the Big Brother house?
I was a massive fan of the show. Like, I'd watched all the previous series beforehand, and that was one of the main reasons why I wanted to do it. And looking back, you're kind of thinking, geez, what were you thinking at the time? But it was, it was more because I was such a big fan of the show. Mm. And it was a very drawn-out audition process, 5 months in total.
And was that kind of difficult? Because presumably the non-disclosure agreements or the secrecy just must be off the wall, really.
Yeah, it was all very cloak and dagger. So, you know, we had to meet producers, and we had to meet psychologists and stuff like that as well, all in secret locations. So you had to meet them in, you know, at a certain corner at whatever time, and then they'll go bring you off to this location. So it was exciting in a way, but also nerve-wracking as well.
You were the third Irish housemate. Obviously, we all know that Anna Nolan and about Brian Dowling, who won the year that he was in. The only thing that would appeal to me about Big Brother is the fact that you've no access to TV, radio or phones for 9 weeks. But given this whole kind of the digital world that we're immersed in, was that kind of difficult for you? Like, I mean, how aware were you that you were being surveilled at all times? Just because you were just normal people, civilians who were, you weren't kind of celebrities going in.
No, not at all. But again, like, I'd watched the previous series, so, and I'd watch, you know, you could be up at 1-2 in the morning, and they had live stream with people asleep in bed, and you're watching people sleeping in bed, so you kind of knew that was going to happen. But you never forget the cameras are there. Not that you act up. I think it's, you know, you could just having a normal conversation like we are now, and next thing a camera will move and you're like, oh yeah, there's the camera there. But you're not, you know, you are aware, and you do kind of, I suppose, be a bit careful in what you're saying as well.
Yeah. Is the trade-off, because obviously it has reality TV has been a huge platform or a step to whether it's stardom, it could be fame, it could be money. You know, we have to assume that part of the attraction is that you're going to come away with some degree of guaranteed work. But did you ever feel that it was a risk that it could all go horribly wrong?
Yeah, a lot of people don't realise that. Say when you meet the psychologist, they give you the talk of doom, it's called. And what it is they tell you what can go wrong. And at the time, you know, my mum and dad were going through a divorce, you know, and they said that this is what, you know, the press might pick up on. Also, I'm from a mixed kind of a race family. So, you know, my dad's Indian Kenyan. And my mum's Irish, and they said, and obviously my dad be black, and they said that you know, someone might pick up on something like that. And it's mad when you think back, you know, it's, you know, for me, it's not a big deal of that. But what they're saying is that things can be twisted and they can make it into a really bigger, I suppose, you know, bigger story. So I remember meeting the psychologist and afterwards leaving the hotel, and I literally got sick outside, and I was like, I'm not putting my family through this. Whatever about me, I says, I can't put my family through this. You know, this is my decision. And I was chatting to a friend of mine, and she said, listen, if you don't go through this, you know, you'll regret not doing it, you know. So well, I had to chat with my family.
Yeah, and they obviously supported you, and it obviously has worked out very, very well for you. Look, you were 25. It's hard to believe it was 20 years ago now. But, you know, when you look at kind of young people and the pressures they're under now, they live in that online world. Look, I mean, is there good aftercare or support? Because maybe you're tougher, you think you're tougher going in, but maybe when you come out and realise what the world has been saying about you, particularly on very, very fast social media like Twitter or Instagram, you know, we're all human in the end.
Yeah, like I you know, you're in the hotel after the series finishes, like, you know, and I remember I was looking back at all the paper clippings and stuff that my family had kept, and I was up till about 6 o'clock in the morning looking back at some of them and thinking, oh God, I can't believe they said that about me. And but I think now, you know, there was no social media really when I did it. There was no, you know, Instagram. There was no Twitter, and you know how poisonous those mediums can be, I suppose, when it comes to the abuse that some people can get on it.
And one thing that isn't there anymore, but was there more in your day, was alcohol. Did you ever regret anything you said inside the house?
Yeah, possibly. Yeah, because I know when, you know, before going in, I was saying, I'm not going to talk about this, I'm not going to talk about that. But as soon as you got a couple of drinks in you, that just went out the window.
Yeah.
But I know I got into one or two arguments, and it was obviously drink fueled. And thinking the next day, going, oh God, I must think I'm, you know, what's going on with this guy, you know?
And I cannot believe that was actually 20 years ago. Ray, I'm going to let you go. Thank you so much for coming to chat with us. Lots of people getting in touch. Afrikaan said, is this reality TV stuff just pure voyeurism? Is it fundamentally seedy, nasty and mucky? Another said, I'm so glad to hear Afrika refer to it as trash. It's not reality, but live TV of many vulnerable young people who would never make the TV for any talent. They are aware of being recorded 24 hours, so they're not really natural and appear to outside observers as fake and often self-conscious, consequently self-absorbed. Has it sort of morphed into that? Because there's even a whole branch now of reality TV that's called structured reality TV. So there is a sense of, you know, in the editing, in what they, you know, what they promote, what they edit out, but also just people are going in and there's contrivance, I think.
Definitely. Like, Love Island's actually an interesting example, because it's funny to hear Ray talking about, you know, leaving his season of Big Brother and reading newspaper clips. You know, it seems kind of quaint now, whereas now Islanders or housemates get their phones back and suddenly they have this, you know, wash of like either abuse or support or whatever it is on their phones. The thing about the contrivance element is there are subgenres in reality TV. So you do have, structured reality like, say, Laguna Beach and The Hills and The Kardashians to an extent and, you know, Selling Sunset and all this kind of stuff. But Love Island is interesting because it doesn't bill itself as a structured reality TV. But you hear Islanders coming out or ex-Islanders coming out and talking about it now and hearing how it actually is filmed and how they, you know,
they're
how
going
little
with
time
their earpieces and their pieces on all the time.
Exactly.
You can't, but, you know, kind
and
of
how
think.
Little time they spend filming as well, which
before
is
interesting. Before I let you go, and I was asking Ray about it, because I think obviously when we saw that the challenges that both people who participated and presented in these programmes, I'm thinking of the late Love Island presenter Caroline Flack, who died by suicide, and others, even the problems that Britain's Got Talent, Susan Boyle, had experienced. Have these companies got their houses in order in terms of how to help people deal with that intensity of it?
They say they have. Whether they have or not, I guess, is up for debate. I think Love Island really got a shock with the two former contestants that died by suicide, and also Caroline, who died by suicide as well. They say that they have a comprehensive welfare programme. They talk to psychologists. They talk, you see one of the contestants this year, Jax, left the villa after a fairly tumultuous confrontation with, you know, fellow Islander Adam. And you would hope that they have had enough of a shock over the last couple of years and seen the damage that can be done by people who are, look, you're always going to have people who have bad intent on social media and stuff. And there's very little you can do about that because, you know, it just is what it is.
You have the opportunity for, in the next 45 seconds, an Irish reality TV show. God. What would you like to see? What would you pitch? Africa.
Oh, God. Terrible. Right. To be honest, OK, I've just come out of the end of Love Island. I'm sorry to tell you that Winter Love Island is coming back at the end of the year. So what I would like is no more reality TV for a little while. Just maybe the thing that they used to have on RTE TV at the end of the day where they played the national anthem and everyone just calmed down for a minute. That would be great. I would love that.
There we go. To FIBS, Africa O'Connell, thank you for joining me to run through all the highs and lows of these many, many, many reality TV shows. We'll take a quick break.
Email brendan@rte.ie.